Your Alternative Talk weekend continues with Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell. Stay tuned and get turned on to the art of dynamic living. It's Mance and Mitchell in the morning.
Yes, indeed it is. Welcome to Mance and Mitchell in the morning. We are happy every Saturday at this hour to bring you the art of dynamic living. And we do it the best way we know how by introducing you to people who are doing the dynamic living. Suzanne, do you agree?
Absolutely.
It's unanimous.
It's unanimous.
And we have the wonderful Valerie Dunn behind the control board, keeping us on an even keel as she does week in and week out. How you doing, Val?
Doing good. Good morning.
I'm trying to remember the last time I was in Hollywood.
And when would that be?
It would have been back in the 70s, during the time of Elton John singing about Jesus freaks out in the streets. And they sure have been lately, because today's the rapture, everybody. If you're listening to this as a repeat and it's not Saturday, anytime after Saturday, you're either very lucky because there was no rapture, or very unlucky because there was a rapture. That's a bust you wouldn't want to miss.
Yeah. I am sorry that there's so much airtime given to that nonsense.
I studied religion for my bachelor's degree. Cal State Fullerton Religious Studies. That's what it says on my diploma. And I can tell you that there is a word for this, probably more than one, but the one that comes to mind is apocalypticism. And it is a phenomenon of religion such that about every generation, maybe more than once in a generation, depending on your faith, depending on your denomination, someone comes along who claims to know, to have either intuited or figured out when the end of the world is coming. And there's a gentleman with a radio station or a radio network of some kind out of California who says that he has figured it out. I couldn't follow his computations, and I'm not impressed by his biblical references that make the case. I don't think he's made a case. But there are millions of people around the world who have been told that today, Saturday, May 21, at 6 p.m. Pacific time, although there's some debate about that in the ranks, some people say it's 6 p.m. wherever you are. So if they're still around in Australia and the rapture is going to happen, y'all are going to hell down there. Sorry, mate. Put another shrimp on the bobby. But 6 p.m. is when it's supposed to happen. And I'm going, so it's 6:01. If there hasn't been this earthquake that's supposed to be the trigger, the signaling event for this, I don't know. I guess I can go back to my rational belief in spirituality as an exercise both of rationality and the subconscious and the deeper, higher nature of men and women. So my view of humanity is due for a review at 6 p.m. tonight, no matter what.
And then I have another job for you. Or while you're busy doing this, my job is going to be figuring out the next rapture date so I can accumulate $72 million in assets by telling people the next date.
That man's, that minister's radio network is worth $72 million.
Right. Because people
$72 million. You can run for high office with $72 million. You can do a lot of things with $72 million.
I'll be figuring out the next rapture date, so stay tuned. I'll let you know, and I'll let you know where you can mail your money.
In more ways than one. Unbelievable. Valerie, you were going to say.
Well, when I saw you guys this morning, I said, we're still here. And you said, no, it's 6 p.m. I didn't realize it was time sensitive, which I find humorous because in the Bible, I don't think anything was time sensitive in the Bible. And the word the rapture is not even in the Bible. So I just don't.
Right.
I think it's quite humorous that somebody can, A, pick the date, and much less the time. I don't see how that's possible.
And they've got people handing out tickets for God, to go back to the Elton John song, in anticipation of this event. So I don't know whether I'm going to be enraptured at 6 p.m. tonight, disappointed, or maybe just a little tired of the whole thing by then. We'll see. But I never get tired of Hollywood. And Hollywood, you know, the great thing about Hollywood, and that's going to be the subject for the balance of the hour, because we have somebody who is in the know about Hollywood, Tinseltown, is that there are as many views and appreciations of Hollywood as there are people to encounter it, to have walked its streets, to have seen the Walk of Fame, to have been to its theaters and met its stars, perhaps.
It is a worldwide icon. You know, we have a sense about the history of Disney World and Walt Disney and Microsoft and Bill Gates. But when you think of Hollywood, you don't really realize that it sprung up out of orchards and farmland. Who was there in the beginning? Who had the vision? Who put it together? Who thought it up? How did they bring that all together? Well, it's interesting when you have a worldwide icon like Hollywood, the Academy Awards, the movie industry, just huge. And you have to think about, well, how did that all start? And we've got the answers today.
And Hollywood, of course, is not just a place that has an image. It's an image creation monster. It's the dragon in the skies, and everybody that sees it has their own experience of it. That's the thing. You can go, since we're in the Seattle area, broadcasting right now, I can look out the window and see it distantly. I can go to the Space Needle, and I see this icon of the emerging space age, right? The Space Needle having been constructed for the 1962 World's Fair. Well, that's the Space Needle experience. But if you go to Hollywood, you're going to a state of mind. It becomes subjective, and then you have the additional responsibility of filtering all the images that come at you in all of their variety and volume coming from this place that is one big magic machine.
Yeah, it is a state of mind. And, you know, people ascribe a lot of things to it, the elegance, the glamour, the movie moguls, the money that went into there, the development. I mean, there's just so much surrounding it. And we ascribe a lot to it. And it's going to be interesting to see how all of that came about and the inside scoop on lots of interesting things.
And when we say inside scoop, we're going back to the beginning. We're going to talk to a relative of the man that started it all. So Hollywood has a how, but also a who. And we're going to find out who when we come back here on Manson Mitchell in the Morning. We're talking about Hollywood this hour. Stick with us on Alternative Talk 1150 KKNW.
Hi, good morning. This is Alicia Michelle with your Astrological Minute for May 21st through the 28th. This morning, our beautiful sun moves into the constellation of Curious Gemini, and the moon moves into Eccentric Intellectual Aquarius. These are two of the three air signs. This weekend will be highlighted by conversations and communications via phone, texting, emailing, all types of instant messaging. Gemini is known for its ability to communicate, its curiosity, and its versatility. Since this isn't an air sign, it is connected to our intellect and not our emotions. During the next month, we may notice ways in which we intellectualize our feelings and our emotions instead of actually feeling them. A word to the wise, be mindful of your sensitivity and your neurological system and do not overstrain in search of new things. With the influence of Gemini, we may feel more restless and more intellectual and versatile than usual. So tap into your ability to write, to conceptualize, and to communicate. The shadow side of this archetype is a superficial nature that goes broad but not deep, being too changeable or too inconsistent in its views. For more astrological insights and awareness into your personal matrix, contact me, Alicia, at astroaware.com or call 425-985-6487. Make it a stellar week.
The members of the Emerald Spiral Co-op invite you to the weekly psychic development class on Wednesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. This is an ongoing class with a different topic each week, so you can join them on the Wednesdays that work for you with your schedule. And 1 week from today, mark your calendar for the Intuitive and Wellness Gathering from noon to 5. Meet some of this area's favorite readers and healers. Admission is always free. June is busting out all over just 11 days from today. And in addition to the regular classes and monthly events, there will be 3 eclipses in 30 days. And with them, 3 opportunities for a personal activation at Emerald Spiral. Larry Taylor will be leading the men's group activities in June, so if you're a male, there are others of your gender gathering to experience what the spiritual side of being a man looks like. Visit this gem of a local business online at emeraldspiral.com or stop by the store this afternoon at 5910 California Avenue Southwest in West Seattle, or call them at 206-937-2275. That's Emerald Spiral Co-op. And be sure to tell them you heard their ad on the radio.
Listen to the Marie Manucherry Show, where energy and medicine meet, every Tuesday and Thursday at noon. It's intelligent and provocative radio. Tuesdays is boot camp for the soul to help you soar. Thursdays, Marie interviews guests from an incredibly talented lineup. To learn more about Marie and her radio show, visit energyintuitive.com or connect with her on Facebook and Twitter. That's the Marie Manucherry Show, every Tuesday and Thursday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
You're listening to Manson Mitchell in the Morning. I'm Suzanne Mitchell, and we are welcoming our guest this morning, Galen Whitley Keith. And I want to tell you a little bit about Galen Whitley Keith. She's a California native and a graduate of Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. She's a writer. She wrote for South Bay Magazine and was awarded top honors in a national writing competition. Her great-grandparents are Hobart Johnstone Whitley and Gigi Whitley. She is the great-granddaughter of the two people who actually started Hollywood. She's conveyed it in a wonderful book called The Father of Hollywood, and she is here today to tell us about her great-grandparents and how they brought Hollywood into being. Welcome to Manson Mitchell in the Morning, Galen. How are you today?
I am really doing great. It's good to be on your show.
Thank you.
Good
and I love sharing about Hollywood.
Oh, absolutely. But before that, I need to mention, it's great that you went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, one of the great campus towns on the West Coast. What a beautiful place. And if you're there on the weekend, McClintock's is a fabulous restaurant. I hear it's a great place for a steak.
It is. I love it. It was there back when I was there, even. which kind of dates me. But yeah, Cal Poly was one of the best experiences I had. I recommend it to anyone.
And we recommend your book on the basis of your literary expressiveness alone. I told you on the phone a couple of days ago, Galen, that I think Danielle Steele has nothing on you. You write with an air of romance, and to me, that's it's interesting because you're writing historically, and yet there is this romantic undertone, which I think you handled very well. I congratulate you.
Well, thank you so much. I think the reason why it has it is a lot of it came from journals written by my great-grandmother. So the romance in it is actually dialogue she put in her own journals. So I'm very fortunate to have a source. Plus, my father is 86 and still alive, and so he actually had a lot of firsthand conversations with his grandparents. And so whenever I have a question, I run to my father and say, "Tell me about this." So it's pretty nice to have a source.
It is great that you have that original source to go to. And what a story to tell, because when you're going back over 100 years, sometimes it's hard to get that information and recreate it. And when you have a firsthand source like a diary and notes, that's really good that you can go to that. Gary and I have not finished the book, but we got a good start on it. And one of the things that I think is really important, like right out front, is like how that land got chosen. What was it? Now, Hobart Johnstone went by his initials AJ, HJ, so it's HJ Whitley. And what was it that HJ was doing that would lead him into that area? Because that in itself, I thought, was pretty fascinating.
Well, the amazing part about him is prior to really actually starting Hollywood, he had already started over 100 towns across the whole United States.
That's what I wanted you to talk about, because that is that the fact that that was his job really intrigued me.
Right. He was on the board of directors of the Rock Island Railroad, who really opened up the whole United States. He did the Oklahoma Run, and he was a man who really enjoyed business more than politics. And so he was like the head of the Chamber of Commerce, although he was involved in a sense. He was friends with Teddy Roosevelt, and he actually spoke before Congress, but he would represent, it's kind of an odd thing, both sides, that would be like the conservatives and the liberal side. Like, he went before Congress and helped set up the laws of the Oklahoma Territory and got them to put Guthrie, Oklahoma, as the original capital of the territory. So he was a very passionate, moving man who could speak before Congress and convince them to choose the spot where he had his bank and his hotel. So he had motives, but he just was a good speaker, and somehow he would speak and bring the present or the future into the present. Like, he had a vision of what he wanted, and he would convince people that that's what they wanted as well. So he was kind of magical that way.
I really did get the sense of his being a visionary, and also he opened up the Northwest Territory as well.
Right, he did. He like my great-grandmother always said, H.J. did at least what 20 men could do just by himself. So he worked endlessly from sunrise to sunset, and he just had vision after vision. In fact, when I was writing the book, the difficult part in writing it, like in the beginning, I kind of explained how I did it, because he wasn't just in Hollywood. He also did the San Fernando Valley. He had a jewelry store. He brought the cotton industry to California. He did the Ridge Route. He was just doing, and it all kind of overlaps, because he'd start something, and then he'd start something else, and then he'd be finishing. So he's kind of amazing that way. Always a new idea.
He kept taking on more and more things. When the very first movie studios were opening up, he realized they needed to get a lot of pianos and organs in, so he opens up a manufacturing place to make organs.
Right. So he saw what was coming and thought, the unfortunate part for him probably is the sound came, which he didn't visualize that part. So then the organ factory didn't maybe do as well. It did for a while, but they ended up selling it. But yeah, you can't visualize all things.
But a place to make movies, I mean, Galen, there had to be a point at which people were asking him, what's a movie? Well, it's a moving picture. Yeah, it would sound like science fiction to a lot of people back in the day.
Right. Well, I guess I should really start back at the beginning. Well, because we're doing like H.J., jumping from here to there, which is what he did. I'll start back when the story starts in the book is when my great-grandparents get married, and they come to California, and this is in 1886. And on their honeymoon, because he was a developer and always looking for land, they rode out to the foothills of the Cahuenga, which became Hollywood. And they were up on the hill, they'd gotten off their horses, and lo and behold, along comes a wagon, and the man stops, it's a Chinese man, and he gets out and he doesn't speak very good English. But fortunately, my great-grandfather asked him the big question, what are you doing? And the answer changed the world. He says, up early, work hard, Hollywood. Because he was hauling wood. And my great-grandfather had an epiphany and said, that's it, I'm going to name the town Hollywood.
I never heard that in my life.
Well,
that's great. It almost sounds like a joke, like it's not true. But this is family lore. You've looked this up.
Right, this is family lore. It's actually, I have a handwritten document that was in my great-grandmother's journal. My father heard it personally from both his grandparents. Unfortunately, they were not alive when I was born, so I didn't hear it firsthand, but they heard it firsthand. And there's actually a reason why it's called Hollywood. The thought came from the man saying Hollywood or something in a Chinese accent, but the way it really came is my great-grandfather was British, and Holly was a symbol of England, and wood at the time was a symbol of Scotland because of all their forests, I guess, or wood is what she put. And so Holly represented England, and Wood represented his Scottish heritage. And that's what he decided to name the town.
So there was just kind of a synchronicity when he heard the Chinese man talking about hauling wood, and it came out like Hollywood.
Right, because I don't know how to do a Chinese accent.
Right,
yeah,
right. But then that triggered the whole idea of both Holly and Wood and putting the two together.
Right.
And then wasn't it originally called Hollywood Land?
No.
It was never called that. Okay.
No, it was not. That's another story we'll get to down the road. It really, that's the Hollywood Land is the sign that's put up. Okay. And he actually came up with the idea for the, I guess we could just go there now. He came up actually with the first lit sign in Hollywood. It didn't say Hollywoodland. It actually said Whitley Heights. If you look at the cover of the book, in the front it says, it shows like Whitley Heights, which is on the National Registry. It's the part of Hollywood he developed, and there's a big electric lit sign that said Whitley Heights because of electricity. He actually brought that to Hollywood. Originally, when he arrived, there was not really plumbing, electricity, there was nothing, and he brought it all to his town. And so it wasn't like Las Vegas is now where you see all these glaring lights. His Whitley Heights was the only electric lit sign at all. So it stood out. And so his friend Harry Chandler, who owned the Los Angeles Times, was having difficulty selling his land. And so he suggested to him, the land was kind of adjacent to HJ's, why don't you put up a sign saying Hollywoodland to sell your land? And so the big Hollywoodland sign got put up. And it was only going to be there for a year. And lo and behold, here's our Hollywood sign of today.
And yet there's a movie, which I have not seen. I have to make a mental note to watch this one. There is a movie called Hollywoodland.
Right. And it has to do with what happened is the land below that kind of became synonymous with the sign, but it really wasn't called Hollywoodland ever. It was just saying Hollywoodland for sale, kind of, but it's Hollywoodland. Come buy your land.
And there is a worldwide cachet to the name and the sign. I encountered it, actually, Galen, firsthand when I met a lady, of all places, at a UFO conference near Scottsdale, Arizona, and I asked her where she was from. Originally, she said from Indiana. She said, but I moved to California many years ago, and I met a gentleman, and we now live together under the Hollywood sign. She was proud of the fact that her home was under the Hollywood sign, and I thought, well, okay. I guess if I lived, you know, within spitting distance of the Space Needle in Seattle, I'd have some bragging rights, too, but we're talking about Hollywood.
Right, and the Hollywood sign, as you know, is known worldwide. You put it up and everyone goes Hollywood and the movie industry. I mean, it's kind of the big emblem. In fact, this year it looked like possibly we'd lose that, but thank goodness a lot of people came forward, and actually Hugh Hefner put the final million in that saved the deal. So, and
good.
Now the land's bought, and that's great, and it's being added to Griffith Park.
I have a feeling, see, Hugh Hefner did that. There, you call that to mind. That's true, and good for Hef. I think that a place like Hollywood, from generation to generation, has needed one or more benefactors in order to keep the whole thing going.
Right, it does. And actually, Hugh has been great. He's actually saved it twice, not just once. Before, it was kind of falling down and needed a lot of repair, and he put $1 million in to do that, like, back in the 60s or 70s, and then he came again and put it forward. So it was really great that he did that.
Oh, sure. Well, good for Hugh Hefner. He usually has his hands full. I'm glad he took time to notice.
Well, yeah, I'm glad he realized that Hollywood had given him a lot, and he gave back a little. So for everybody, because it's actually now the park's added to Griffith Park, so the land belongs to the people. So that's kind of nice.
Now, H.J. also had the vision of bringing movies to Hollywood because, as I understand it from your book, when he took a look at the environs, he said, you know, we've got the mountains and the canyons for westerns. We've got the beaches and the cliffs for high seas adventures. We've got L.A. for gangsters. And we got the deserts for pioneer days. And year-round sunshine, so you can make movies, you know, practically all year round.
It's nice that there was a place for gangsters. What, Chicago wasn't big enough?
Well, Chicago was not sunny.
Yeah, that's right. You couldn't get a suntan.
So wasn't that part of it as well? His vision went beyond just settling that area and creating, you know, plats of land and tracts where people can buy homes. His vision was actually to get that industry there. Isn't that right?
Right. Well, see, one of his things he always did, and this was before he got here, he always was grateful that he had had so many years kind of in-house training. So he had a vision before he actually got to Hollywood. He always, and it's what he did in Hollywood as well. He built the Hollywood Hotel, which was a resort at the time, like the best resort in the area, on the corner of Hollywood and Highland, which is where the Kodak Theater currently is located. And across the street, he put a bank in. Because when you're developing land, the people need to come buy their land. They don't have anywhere to live. They don't have a home yet. They can live in the Hollywood Hotel. And he also knew when he started a town, he needed for it to be successful, because as far as his writing go, I don't know if it's that true as of today in 2011, but during his lifetime, every single town he started grew and remained. Like a lot of towns, you know, are a ghost town.
Right.
But what his vision was is you need an industry where the young people can work, the old people can work, you know, kind of helps the town grow. So he was always out looking for an industry to make his town successful. And so that's actually why he brought the movie industry. He brought the cotton industry to California. He imported cottonseed from Egypt. So he was always looking. I think that was the big thing. Like, he didn't really come to California to develop, because he did do the Oklahoma run. He really didn't come back until the late 1800s to start Hollywood. But the fact that he was thinking of naming it way back then, before he even bought the land, he was thinking of naming it. He was always thinking forward. What else can I do? What else can I do? And so it was fortunate. One day he was walking down the street and he ran into David Horsley, who was a filmmaker. And he was lost and he asked for directions. And instead of just going, ah, go right, go left, go down the street, he actually walked him to his destination. And while they were walking, they discussed the movie industry. And instantly a light bulb went off. That's what I want in my town.
And Horsley ended up buying a couple of lots later.
He did. And he actually, because my great-grandfather had this vision, the first movie actually made by a Hollywood studio was filmed October 26, 1911, at the Whitley Estates in their orchards. He said, come out, test your filming, and David Horsley and his brother and Al Christie came out. They did a test run, and the next day they rented Blondew Tavern in Hollywood, and that was the beginning of their film studio, which was called Nestor's. And then with time, they kind of evolved and, you know, they regrouped and joined each other and switched. And eventually they're Universal Studios. So that's pretty amazing. He got Universal Studios to come to Hollywood.
Yep. Now, that's a place I've been to.
Right.
I took the tour. I can't even imagine what it's like today. It was the mid-70s when I was there. It was still a pretty new attraction. We are talking with Galen Whitney Keith. She is the author of The Father of Hollywood, and we are definitely going to get into, in fast-forward mode, some stories that are uniquely Galen's to tell, including a family connection that's going to blow your mind. So when we come back, more of Galen Whitney Keith and all things Hollywood during this hour. Manson Mitchell in the Morning, right here on Alternative Talk 1150 KKNW.
I'm Susie Oliver, the Passions and Possibilities coach who supports individuals and groups to leap vibrantly and prosperously into paying it forward in the world as passioneers. I'm on a mission to prove that when you do what you love and give back, the rest does follow. This week's passioneering moment is on order. I caught myself rushing today from the get-go. One look at my to-do list and I was on a roll, checking email, making a Facebook post, and starting on the 3 open projects I had left the night before. Had I stopped to eat? No. Meditate? No. Journal? No. Enjoy the glorious sunshine and songbirds? Heck no. I was on a mission to conquer my day rather than savor it. It certainly wasn't a mission of joy, and it was a day of doing that my ego convinced me was more important than living and loving. So what's the big rush? In reality, the rush was all in my head. What if I had chosen to create a day of joy instead? What would my morning have looked like, and how much more would I have enjoyed my day? What would I have to give up to create this kind of day? Certainly, I'd have to release control and some activities packed on my calendar. Sounds hokey, yes, and it's the truth. Here's my invitation for you. Tomorrow morning, I invite you to create a mission of joy for your day where your sole to-dos are to-bes. Simply remember that truly, you have all the time in the world. There is no need to rush, strain, or struggle. Relax, release, and enjoy. Your body and soul will thank you. So will your household and the world around you. For more information about Passioneer Coaching, Consulting, and Marketing Services, or if you'd like to connect with the wisdom of over 350 Passioneers around the globe, check out PassionsAndPossibilities.com. I'm Sue Zeal Oliver. Happy Passioneering.
Staying up to date on The Gary Mance Show is simple. Just go to GaryMance.com for the latest info on topics and guests. Sign up for early notice of future shows on a spam-free listserv. Continue the conversations online with the show blogs. And now you can email your questions for Gary and his guests during the show by going to the homepage and clicking on GaryMance@RocketMail.com. It's that easy. Log on and join the A-team of Sunday Night Talk in Seattle. The web of mastery and mystery is GaryMance.com.
Want to hear something different from talk radio? The choice is clear. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
The club with his pants falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is me. That's entertainment. The lie.
That's entertainment. And if you are an ex-governor who is acting like a clown with your pants on the ground and things of that nature, you can get into a great deal of trouble, let me tell you. We are talking to Galen Whitley Keith. She is the author of The Father of Hollywood, and it's a very well-written book. There are romantic overtones and undertones. When you read it, it's like, I think it's a trip down Daniel Steele Lane. I really do. And that's a compliment, Galen. You are quite a fine writer. When we talk about Hollywood, there is, Suzanne, I'm going to have you jump in now because then I'm going to go into something else. But you were talking about kind of a hotel that made everything happen. Might have been the start of that Babylon image of Hollywood.
Well, as I understand it, and as Galen said, you know, the stars made their home at the Hollywood Hotel, and as the actors and actresses were coming to town and making the films, there began to be a little bit of a discontent about not wanting the town to degrade. There was, you know, a high moral principle to it. And they solved that in a really interesting way with the Hollywood Studio Club. So would you talk a little bit about that, Galen?
Well, I think the problem was, probably as today, that they, when the young girls went to be cast, they offered favors. There was scandal even in the beginning of Hollywood. And so to resolve that, they made a place where young actresses could come stay and live and be safe and not be on the street, because a lot of people may know or may not know that signs were put up in stores in Hollywood, no dogs or actors allowed. So they were getting a pretty bad reputation. I mean, there was the Fatty Arbuckle scandal. Kind of, you were talking about scandals earlier. He was a big star, a silent screen star. There was charges pressed against him. A young starlet died. They said it was he that did it. Down the road, it was maybe a botched abortion. I'm not really sure what it was. But there was scandal all along, and it wasn't giving a good name to Hollywood. So they came up with an idea of having this place, you know, with standards so that young starlets could come. And in fact, a lot have lived there over the years that became famous.
And they would have the Hollywood bungalows. I always thought, what a romantic way to live. If you are a man about town, an actor making his mark in Hollywood, to have one of those bungalows, you were living the fast life, baby.
Well, yeah, that was the problem. Some of them were in it. As we know, they still are. I mean, actually, last night, for example, I went and saw Beaver. It was kind of interesting because of all the scandal, I was curious what Mel Gibson's first movie out the door would be. And it was different. I'm not sure what I thought, but I mean, it had a good message. He's a good actor, but I think the problem with the script, it always goes back to, it was a fictional script that I didn't find all of it true, that I could get my hand on. Like, a man in a corporate setting with a beaver talking. It's kind
okay.
of interesting.
Oh, weird. Okay. No, yeah.
It was interesting, but the weird part I want to tell you that I saw at the end, I think the message of the movie is probably what they were going for. When they do the, like, I never leave a movie anymore till it's almost finished, because you never know what will be in the credits.
Right.
You know, sometimes they do little clips. But in this credit, it was kind of interesting. Let's say they put up the name, Gary is the person's name, and he's the director. And then they take the A, and Gary disappears, and there's just an A. And then next they come up, and it might say the name Randy, and it incorporates that A. And I don't know if their message was there's a little bit of everybody and everybody else. I'm not really sure what that is, but I suggest viewers go look and figure out kind of like, why did they do it that way?
And
what
people
was the message?
What was the message? And people, there's that little hook at the end. People need to stay through the credits. I know that I don't go to the theaters all that often because, I mean, in the VCR and DVD era, you don't have to. But as far as going to the theater, I find that more than half the people are gone by the time the credits are wrapping up. And at the end, many times, as you have suggested, there will be some little twist or some little hint, some little cachet at the end that I'm glad I stayed to see. I remember K-Pax. That was a fun movie. Jeff Bridges.
Right.
Jeff Bridges is there, and he's at the end, after the credits are done, you're still not sure whether Kevin Spacey's character was an alien or not. It was a mystery. It was an unsolved mystery, and you got that sense of a continuing mystery because at the end of the credits, Jeff Bridges goes outside, and he has a telescope there, and he's in his backyard, and I can't remember whether he's just stargazing or looking through the telescope, I forget, but at any rate, he's stargazing one way or another, and that's after the credits. And then I got this little shiver like, well, was he or wasn't he? And you know that Bridges' character was wondering the same thing, and it asks the question for all of us, are we alone? Little stuff like that is powerful.
Right, and so I think that may be the message in The Beaver is some insanity in all of us. Because it's really about depression, and obviously if you're walking around with a beaver doing your talking, you're not quite normal.
No, you're not playing with a full deck, that's true.
Right, and so I think it's to bring the thought, I guess that was the big message of the movie is, you know, who are we, what are we, what should we do with our life? So
well,
that's just kind of a side note, but that had to do with really what you were talking about, Arnold. I think there's been lots of scandal. Obviously, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, he was married. And some people seem to transition better through their crisis than others.
Ain't that the truth?
I'm not sure why that is, but I actually went to the movie last night mostly because at the Cannes Film Festival, they said it got a standing ovation, the movie The Beaver. So I wanted to go see what it was because when I saw The King's Speech, which I still think is a better movie, when I was there, it got an ovation.
Okay, well, I'm glad that happened because the French, they'll clap at anything weird.
Right, I think so.
You know, Galen, speaking of transitioning through the, adversity, that was one of the reasons that Cecil B. DeMille got established. He wanted to make Hollywood, a little bit more respectable, and after all the scandals, he decided to make biblical films.
Right, I think there was a big push, probably. Well, it's an interesting fact that Hollywood itself had more churches than Los Angeles. It was kind of a Bible Belt originally. And so there was a push to do that. And he thought, which is really true, because I believe his grandfather was an Episcopal
minister.
He had that root, and he said, what a better way to teach the Bible than put it up on the screen. So he used that as his way to reach the world.
And in the case of the Ten Commandments, it's half a day. You're there. Some of those biblical epics, we remember the day, if you go back far enough, you remember the intermission, right? That's right. When you went out for the bonbons and the popcorn. There are these epic movies that went on and on. Ben-Hur is another one. That was amazing. You really got your money's worth back then, that's for sure. I wanted to ask you, though, before we take our next break. Now, I promised a mind blower. At least that was the impact on me when you told me the story over the phone as we set up this interview, Galen. You have a family connection going all the way back to grade school and involves your grandmother and a very recognized name.
Yes, Elizabeth Taylor. Yeah, she was her fourth grade teacher, and I love it because my grandmother actually told me stories about Elizabeth Taylor. She was an amazing child. She, like she said, she was so striking. Like, I actually have seen Elizabeth Taylor in person.
Really?
Like, her eyes are just beautiful.
Now, when did you see her?
Within radiates.
Was this... That's what I've always heard. Within recent years, I mean, did you see her in your prime? Because I, you know,
I saw her in her prime more than now. Yes.
Oh my goodness.
I haven't seen her lately. Yeah. So I wouldn't. I mean, obviously she passed away this year, but I haven't seen her in her later years. But when she was younger, she was absolutely gorgeous, and she had this spirit in her. You know, when you see, like, she just was alive and vibrant, and she was quite brilliant. If you look at her, I think that's where that's another topic, but that I've been studying on is. The movie industry is kind of morphing because of the internet and all that, and the stars of today are kind of following in her footsteps. They're embracing, like, I'm going to bring out a new perfume. She was a very successful businesswoman as well.
Well, that's true. That's true. I have heard it said, and these were by way of memorializing her when I heard the story, but she went to see, I think it was Richard Burton. I believe they were married at the time, and he appeared on Broadway. And she went to the play. She just showed up one night, and even though her visit was anticipated, when she entered the whole place just stopped. Everybody was just dumbstruck because Liz was present among them. And I thought, wow, imagine having that kind of destiny. I mean, the violet eyes are just the start of it, but to go in and have a place as prestigious as Broadway in that location absolutely stop and everybody hold their breath because you've shown up.
Right, she kind of has the presence of the Queen of England, really. But she's the Queen of the Stars, really. And she was one of those stars that, one of the few, I don't know that we have as many today as we used to have. They just had this era or of glow, whatever.
Galen, since you met her in person, I mean, were her eyes noticeably a different color?
Yes, they were, and they were, and this was before the day of contacts.
Right,
right.
So they were naturally hers, but she was just a kind woman. Her, like her flaw, probably like all of us, we all have the flaw side, was married men. She did take Debbie Reynolds' husband. So she was another one of the people who went, as we know, she had, I think, had eight marriages, although two were to the same man, but.
I don't know how she and Mickey Rudy didn't get together. Between what they
know.
Have, 15 or 16?
At the time, she had someone else. I don't know.
Well, Elizabeth Taylor, now when she's in fourth grade, this is about the time she is getting ready to make National Velvet and national news by her playing that role.
Right. I think my grandmother said the sad part of her was her life was kind of like Michael Jackson. I think that's possibly why they connected so well. They kind of lost their childhood. Because they had to be, they were doing filming. She was in such an adult world, and she, when she left school, she went to writing lessons, dancing lessons, probably singing lessons, everything. And so she just really didn't have a chance to be a child. And so I think she and Michael Jackson, for whatever reason, connected on that ground, or maybe they were both just really kind. I think Michael Jackson had kind of a kind, soft spirit too. So.
They were each was their own person. And I think that nonconformists have a certain commonality, even though they may have very different visions of life, being so individual, they spot each other. They can relate to each other on a subterranean level, I think.
Right, and maybe, like you said, it was like she walked in the room and the room stopped. Michael walked in the room and the room stopped. It would be hard to find anyone you could relate to in a normal realm.
That's true.
And they
Good
were both
point.
On the same level of showstoppers.
I'd like to talk with you. We have to take our last break of this hour. I'd like to talk to you about the Walk of Fame. It means so much to so many, not only every fan, but every aspiring actor and actress would love to be able to get their name, get their star on the Walk of Fame. And you have stories surrounding that. We'd like to share those with the listeners. So let's get to that, Galen, when we come back after a short break. We're talking with Galen Whitley Keith, author of The Father of Hollywood. And we'll be right back on Alternative Talk 1150.
Sometimes I feel sitting on the train. Every step I get to, I'm clocking that game. Everyone's a winner, we're making our fame. When if I hustle, I'm making my name. Sometimes.
Are you suffering from little sleep, high blood pressure, or physical pain? Or are you just overwhelmed and stressed out from your daily routine? The answer may be Reiki, a Japanese technique that reduces stress and promotes well-being by triggering the body's natural healing abilities. Reiki master Heidi Harrison has more than 20 years experience treating clients with a variety of emotional, mental, and physical disorders. Heidi practices distant Reiki by phone for clients around the country using non-traditional prayer, affirmations, and chanting. Start improving your health now for an uplifting, inspiring, relaxing journey in the comfort of your own home. Contact Heidi at yourreikijourney@gmail.com. Visit Heidi's blog at yourreikijourney@wordpress.com, her Facebook page at Your Reiki Journey, or on the sponsor tab on the Gary Mantz website. Let Heidi take you on your Reiki journey of relaxation. Heidi is offering a spring special of two 75-minute telephone sessions for only $100. Contact her today for this limited-time offer.
Hi, this is Terry Loving of LovingVisions.com. You've heard that the current social media tools available like Facebook and Twitter can be hugely effective at increasing the number of visitors to your site and drive success to your business. They are just the tip of the iceberg. Contact me and we can create an internet marketing plan step by step to make your website your best, most effective employee 24 hours a day. Call 206-200-0914 or visit lovingvisions.com.
Radio advertising is very affordable on the Gary Mann Show and it can work for your business.
Hi, I'm Reverend Rhea Sunshine. I've been advertising on the Gary Mantz Show since August of 2009 and have added clients as a direct result of advertising with Gary.
While we can't guarantee that everyone will have the same success as Rhea, we can promise we'll do our best to get the word out about your product or service inexpensively to a growing listenership.
It sure worked for me.
And it can work for you too. Contact me, Gary Mantz, on the web at GaryMantz.com.
Tell your friends, the place to be is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
The night of nights, no more rehearsing and nursing apart. We know every card by heart. Overture, curtain lights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
And this is it on Mantz and Mitchell in the Morning, our final segment with our special guest, Galen Whitley Keith, the granddaughter of the father of Hollywood. And Gary, you wanted to ask about the Walk of Fame.
Well, the Walk of Fame is something to which every actor and actress aspires. That's their dream. That I'm sure that young actors and actresses watch The Secret now because they want the mental equivalent. They hope the law of attraction will eventually get them to the Walk of Fame. It is a very big deal. And Galen, you have stories about that. I'd love to hear some of them, but I want to start with the fact that there was a man associated with the Walk of Fame, and anybody who's into the movies is going to recognize the name Johnny Grant. I grew up in Southern California, in the OC, as they call it nowadays, Orange County. And I remember watching Johnny Grant in attendance every time somebody was added to the Walk of Fame. And I kept asking myself, how did he get this gig? Who is this Johnny Grant guy? And why is he there hobnobbing with all of these stars and superstars? I mean, nothing against the guy. And he died a few years ago. And when they did the memorial piece during the Oscars, they showed his picture. And I thought that was very kind of them. But really, I mean, was he a columnist? Who was he to Hollywood and to these stars that he kept being there presiding every time they were added to the Walk of Fame?
Well, in the golden years, he was a big part of television and radio and things. And what actually occurred was he became the honorary mayor of Hollywood. And he never got married, and so he was the representative that went out and promoted Hollywood. He was very connected with the Hollywood Chamber. And the Hollywood Chamber is who runs the Walk of Fame. And they actually were the ones who started it. In fact, today, if your viewers go to the walkoffame.com, they can look up all kinds of information on the Walk of Fame. The Walk of Fame just celebrated its 50th year. And in fact, Johnny Grant, they're actually thinking, I kind of flip back to that. He was so successful in helping promote, and because Hollywood, if you would recall, had kind of a sleazy era too, where there were kind of streetwalkers on the scene, and he connected with the chamber and went about kind of helping bring people in to renovate Hollywood. So I think that's how he got the position.
Sweet
gig. He was
just
their spokesman, yeah.
Well, he earned it, too. It wasn't just something like he was a hanger-on by any means.
No, he wasn't a hanger-on. He lived in the Roosevelt Hotel, and his whole life was Hollywood. And he pretty much, that's why he got the position, I think. He knew the stars because he'd been in the industry, and he continued to know them, and he continued to promote Hollywood and try to bring it back to its glory of, because it did have its glory years, and then it kind of had its, I don't know, 70s, 60s, you know, all the people taking drugs, and they kind of had, you know, streetwalkers, and now they're trying to build it back up because Cirque du Soleil has come to Hollywood, and they're using the Kodak Theater, and they're trying to just build up things, and there's the new W Hotel, and so that's kind of what he did. But then we'll go back to the Walk of Fame. The unique thing is we go back to the Hollywood Hotel, and originally when the Silent Stars lived in the Hollywood Hotel, they ate there, and they wanted to have something to show they were special, and so the hotel came up with the idea of putting a star on the ceiling over their table. So if Rudolph Valentino ate there, there would be a star over his table, so when people like you or I would come and liked him, we'd sit at his table. And when the hotel went to be torn down, instead of losing that kind of historic landmark, they put them into the ground. And that's how that occurred.
I had never heard that before.
No, I hadn't either.
And there are a select few people, Frank Sinatra among them, who actually have more than one star. Isn't that true?
That's true. Mickey Rooney actually probably is the award winner. He has a star in every category. He was actually at the Walk of Fame, and he spoke, and he's been in everything, television, radio, producing, direct. He's done it all. And so he's kind of the iconic Hollywood Walk of Fame star. But you did say your listeners might be interested. Actually, anyone, they're actually in the nomination period up to May 31st, 2011, at noon, you can nominate your favorite star to be put on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Generally, the ones who win probably come from nominations from studios because you also have to come up with $25,000 to put towards your star.
Well, if the rapture doesn't happen, I know a church in California, they could have their whole sidewalk to themselves if they wanted to.
Right.
So, but if people want to participate, what, you go online?
You can go online, and if you go to the walkoffame.com, it's run by the Hollywood Chamber. This year, they nominated people like Penelope Cruz, Ridley Scott, Donald Sutherland. In fact, if any of your listeners will be in Hollywood on Monday, May 23rd at 11:30, Simon, you know, from the TV show, will be getting his star.
Simon Cowell?
Simon Fuller?
Fuller, okay.
Yeah, he's going to be getting his star, so you could go down and watch him get...
Simon, they give Simon Cowell a... Simon
from American Idol.
Simon Cowell, they give him a star. I want to be there throwing rotten fruit. What are you kidding? Bring rotten eggs, everybody.
Well, and
not really.
And Galen, your great-grandmother, Gigi, had something to do with the fact that the Grauman's Chinese Theater is even there.
Well, I think Sid Grauman was a personal friend. Actually, I remember sitting in Charlie Brown's, which used to be across from Grauman's Chinese, C.C. Brown's, not Charlie Brown, Charlie Brown's there. The cartoon character, and I was eating lunch with my grandmother, and we were looking out at the Grauman's Chinese, and she was saying, oh yeah, we're good friends with Sid, and so you just, these weird, odd memories you have, and so my great-grandmother was a very adventuresome woman. She traveled the world many times, and she went to China, and when she came back, she told Sid of all the wonders she saw. And she convinced him he had done like the Egyptian and that the Chinese might be the next thing. And actually, a unique fact about the Chinese theater is all the things they have were imported from China. They're actually relics from China. He got special permission from the Chinese government to import them into the U.S.
Well, and there's another Hollywood icon. Galen, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Mance and Mitchell in the Morning. You have been just a delight to talk to.
And what a privileged perspective you have,
yes.
Galen, and I know you appreciate that.
Yes, well, thank you so much, Susan and Gary. I enjoyed being on your show. It's a great show.
Oh, we'll have you back sometime. We'll talk some more Hollywood.
We'll talk.
And I love it because it's on the internet. I can listen to it here in California. It's great.
Yes, you can. Thank you so much.
Well, I hope people will go. There is one more little quick thing. You can go to my website, thefatherofhollywood.com, and vote for your favorite stars for the first 100 years.
So and get the book.
And get the book, too. Yeah, they can go vote. We're having a thing for the first 100 years. Pick your favorite star. So I hope they'll go and do that, too.
Beautiful. The Father of Hollywood, written by Galen Whitley Keith. Thanks so much, Galen. Hope we talk again.
Thanks. Bye.
And stay tuned for the Gary Mance Show coming up next.
I like the way you said that.